You are listening to the podcast of C3 The Hague. We are a church with one service, two talks, one English and one Dutch. We hope this talk inspires you.
So I want to start with John chapter 14, the saying of Jesus. And it's very interesting because Jesus has a conversation with Thomas. And Thomas gets a bit of a bad rap in Christianity, because he's often called Doubting Thomas, even though Jesus, I don't think, gave him that title. He never said, okay, you know, you are Doubting Thomas or Unbelieving Thomas or anything like that. But Jesus is saying something. I want to read it to you. It says, where I go and the way you know. And so, obviously, you know, Jesus was about to die and be raised from the dead and everything, and then he would go to heaven. And the statement that he makes is pretty vague. You know, I would probably say that most of the disciples had no clue what he was saying. You know, where I go and the way you know. They were like, what? And so there is this, hey guys, thanks for joining. Come right in. And so he says, "The where you go and the way you know." And nobody knows, you know. And this often, I think, a picture of church life and maybe life in general, that, you know, Jesus is saying something, or, you know, there's like a statement of truth. And we want to sort of like fake that we know. And then one person asks the question, like, what do you mean? And then we call him Doubting Thomas. You know, well, I'm actually really grateful that Thomas asks this question, because I would have never known what Jesus was about to say next, which is extremely controversial. And I want to talk about that statement. He says, Thomas says, Lord, we do not know where you are going. And how can we know the way? And Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And so this is like a claim to fame, a claim to truth, which is almost ridiculous. As a matter of fact, I would say that if anybody else than Jesus would say this, chances of 2 billion followers in this time and age, with internet and all information available to us, actually still believing that is going to be very slim. Like, maybe there's been little cults where people said, I am the Savior, I am the Almighty, I am powerful, I can do tricks, and whatever. And they would have had a temporary following. But it's very fascinating. Jesus has this billions of followers over a period of thousands of years, and he's actually said this, which you're going to have to come to grips with, that it's like, it's quite a saying. and so let me just start with this story about the, you know, there's an English saying, the elephant in the room. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is religion, right? So there's actually this story about, this famous story, actually, I believe it has a background, a Hinduistic, Buddhistic origin, this story. But this is used a lot in our modern day to describe religion. And the story is about a group of blind men, not having any concept of what an elephant is, not having any experience with elephants before, which I don't have any experience with elephants. I'm not going to lie to you. But for some reason, and we don't know what the reason is, they together encounter an elephant. And this elephant is not running away. It's pretty trusting because he stands still. It's a very unlikely situation, but it's obviously an illustration. And so they're trying to figure out what is here in front of them, because they could probably do click sounds or ticks and like, oh, there's an object in front of us. But what is the object? So the first blind man goes, you know, this is where a handheld mic is not helpful. He goes, you know, it's almost like meme. You know, he touches his stomach and he goes, you know what, this is like, I believe that we're dealing with a flat and huge surface. And he's trying to feel himself around. He's like, this is a big surface. We're dealing with something big here. Well, the other blind person in the group, what is a slurf, baby? Trunk? 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 Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I believe I call something in my car a trunk. But anyway, so he touches the trunk of the elephant. Isn't that really the word? Are you just? I think you're just having fun with me. Anyway, so he's touching the trunk. He's like, well, you know what? I don't believe that we're dealing with a big surface. I think we're dealing with something like it's almost like a tree. Yeah, a tree trunk. And we're dealing with a trunk here, people. I believe this is a trunk. and so good word that, actually, because you know what? This is more like a tree trunk. Another person touches the feet of the elephant, the elephant, and he goes, no, we're not dealing with a trunk. We're talking oak tree here. This is huge. You know, this is massive. I can feel the structure and everything. I'm not going to tell you where the people touch the elephant because it gets a bit graphic after this. It's a little bit of a, you know, and the smells and everything involved. But let's stay away from all that. But the fascinating thing with this story of this group of blind men, and hey, welcome, man. Thanks for joining us. This group of blind men and the elephant, and you might know this story, is that the conclusion is, well, religion is like the blind man. Every religion has some sort of an experience, some sort of an observation, and is blind, so it cannot see the whole picture. And so together, all the religions together contain a bigger truth, and that truth is more universal and is more complete. So that is truth, and every religion has a slight sense of truth. Have you ever heard that idea? And I think that's a very common idea in our society. However, there's a bit of a problem with the analogy when you come up with that conclusion. And this story, however, is being used to come up with different conclusions, but this is one of the conclusions that is being created, that people get out of this story. But the problem is that for somebody to make the statement that all religions have a part of truth really brings with it the claim that now you can oversee the bigger picture. Because you've got like a unique vantage point, you've got like a unique camera position. You can see, but religions are blind. And obviously the problem with that statement is, if you have to apply that statement to your own convictions, you're going to have to say, okay, my picture of the blind man and the elephant is also a small part of it, so I'm adding my nugget to it, but my conclusion can never be complete, because I believe that all conclusions are subjective and all conclusions are incomplete, right? So it's a bit of a challenge and a bit of a problem with that conclusion that every religion has a part of truth. Now let me do say this. I do believe that every religion contains truths. Some religions a little bit more than others, in my personal subjective opinion. But I do believe that there's things, the way that people interact with each other, and there's elements that are good and there's elements that are bad. I do believe that religions have that. But to say like all religions are just a small part of a bigger truth, to me is interesting. And I want to talk to you for a little moment about the concept of objective, scientifically founded unbelief versus subjective faith. So objective scientific unbelief versus subjective faith. Because there's this group of very popular atheistic thinkers, a couple of the writers that are sort of in a group. It's not an organized group, but they do really seem to like each other on YouTube and stuff, and on Facebook, are Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and they are somewhat called by some people a school of strong rationalism. And so I got a couple of quotes for you just to help us to go through what that means a little bit more quickly. This is Tim Keller, The Reason of God, a very interesting book. Tim Keller says, they, being the strong rationalists, want an empirical argument for God that is airtight and therefore convinces almost everyone. They won't believe until they get this. He says, is there anything wrong with that? I do think so. He goes a little bit further to explain that this strong rationalism, and I realize it's a little bit more going to school or something, but I will follow up with a little bit more Bible. He goes on to say the strong rationalists, they believe in this principle, they hold to a principle which is called the verification principle. He explains the verification principle, saying the verification principle, namely, that no one should believe a proposition unless it can be proved rationally by logic or empirically by a sense experience. Now, then he criticizes this thought, and so I got that quote for you as well. He says, to begin with, this strong rationalism It can't live up to its own standards. Tim Keller says, how could you empirically prove that no one should believe something without empirical proof? That's a bit of a difficult statement. I'm going to let that sit in for a little bit. But how can you empirically prove that you cannot believe anything if you don't have empirical proof? It's an interesting statement, right? Because this idea that you need to have empirical proof for everything that you believe, first of all, it's difficult to prove. But second of all, the thought, and he goes into this, the thought that if you do not believe in God, that is like somehow neutral ground, is actually a little bit difficult. He says, you can't, and that reveals it to be ultimately unbelief. Strong rationalism also assumes that it is possible to achieve the view from nowhere, a position of almost complete objectivity. Wouldn't that be nice? And maybe you've had arguments with somebody in your environment that has achieved in their own mind a complete objectivity. It's very frustrating. I think sometimes my wife thinks that that's me. But it's really like complete objectivity. And he says, a position of almost complete objectivity, but virtually all philosophers totally today agree, sorry, he doesn't say totally, all philosophers today agree that is impossible. Yeah. Now, Tim Keller goes into this example of a judge, and he says, if you are a judge, and you somehow have a big stake, an important stake in a company, and you are about to, and you are getting involved in a court case, but the court case is about that company, well, that means that you've got a problem because you have a real strong stake, you've got a very strong stake in the game, and you want to see the ruling of court go a certain way. He says, obviously, if that happens, a judge would say, I'm no longer objective. I cannot stand for my integrity, even though I would try to do everything according to my standards. It's very difficult to prove that, but also I cannot prove my objectivity, so I need to take my way away from the case, because I cannot make a ruling on this. I'm not objective. The problem, Tim Keller says, is we are that judge when it comes to God, when it comes to the meaning of life, because we all have a stake in the game. There is a certain way of life that we like. There's a certain way of doing things. There are experiences that are painful, that are hurtful, that we've experienced, and we're trying to make sense out of these things, and the concept of God could very well get in the way of the stake that we have in the game. So what you believe, obviously, is always personal. And so the problem is you cannot take yourself away as a judge. You cannot say, okay, I'm going to leave this judgment up to somebody else. But you do have to be aware, I feel, that you are not objective. And let me just be real honest. I am not objective when it comes to God. I'm actually quite subjective. I was raised in a Christian home. At the age of 15, I didn't really feel like living like that. I wasn't interested in church anymore. I had some bad experiences in church. I did have some good experiences with God. At the age of 17, 18, I started to connect more with the idea of God, and I became a Christian again. But I would say, you know, obviously, let me just put my cards on the table. I was raised in a Christian family. So in a lot of ways, it's very difficult for me to think what it would be like to be raised in a family that is totally non-Christian, not believing, or believes something completely different. Like, I probably don't have all the answers, and I might not even have all the questions for you. I'm subjective. But the thing is, so are you. See, if you would have been born under the reign of the Taliban in Afghanistan, if that was your background, chances are that you wouldn't believe what you're believing today. Chances are that you would have different convictions. And there's another thing that's very interesting to me, because I think our society is very tolerant, so we like to keep, you know, value every opinion. But when we talk about modern Western thinking, it is actually one of the very rare cultures, some would say one of the only cultures in history, and even currently, that holds a view, which I don't think is even completely true, because I think there are many people in our society who confidently say they believe there is much more between heaven and earth than what they empirically see. But somehow there's this thought that now Western society has achieved a level of knowledge and a perspective that is scientific and empirically just and empirically right, that somehow is better than all the cultures worldwide, historically and in complete history. So we have people, it's amazing, we have come to the pinnacle of truth. It will never get any better than this. We know, because we're in the knowing right now, because we've got science and everything, which we're going to talk about science. I really value science because I like to fly and stuff. And even though that's becoming controversial lately, so I'm going to have to pay off pay off my conscience for that. But I need to fly. Let me just put it that way. I have to fly. but you know that obviously you have to trust in science to do that. So I'm never going to say I do not believe in science. As a matter of fact, I think there's probably a lot more connection between science and biblical truth than you think. You know, God says somewhere he sits on the circle of the earth. You know, well, obviously that wasn't the interpretation in the Middle Ages. But you know, when you think about what science has come up with lately, you would say, okay, so Christians claimed that the earth was square, but you know what? Actually, it holds up when you talk about the Bible. So anyway, I'm going to leave that for you to think about, and we're going to go into that a little bit more. What was I saying, maybe? I was saying that, okay, so we've achieved the pinnacle of truth. We think we're objective, but obviously, saying that would actually mean saying that our culture is superior to all other cultures. And I know in our tolerant society, we don't want to do that. We don't want to say we're superior, but we do like to think, and I'm saying we, like it seems to be sometimes a minority opinion, but it seems to be the loudest voice when it comes to Christian faith that is the thing. And so as a Christian, let me just talk to you if you're a believer right now. As a Christian, you sometimes feel that when you talk to people that you are on a deficit. That you are sitting like the other team scored a couple of points on the side of Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and everything, and you're on the deficit, and now the pressure to prove is in your court. Now you have to prove. Why do you believe? As though there is a neutral position somehow, and now you've taken a subjective position. And so if you're a non-Christian, I would say turning to Christianity is not turning from a subjective, empirically proven position, a neutral position, to an objective empirically proven position to a subjective non-proven position. I would say it's moving from one subjective position to another subjective position, and you have to make a decision. I hate saying have to in church, but you need to make a decision whether or not what you believe. So this idea of objective truth, I really want to challenge that a little bit, because you are shaped by your society, and it's hard to take yourself away from your view. It's difficult for me, I fully admit that. It's difficult for each and every one of us. Okay, so then in the coming, in the last 45 minutes we have, no, we're just going to do 10 minutes and then we're going to finish. But in this last 10 minutes that I have, I want to talk about this truth claim of Jesus. Because it is quite something that Jesus is saying, isn't it? He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Somehow, I only have this scripture in Dutch. Do you have the English? Brian. I like Brian, man. That's preparation right there. So that's chapter 7. Okay, so but let's first think about this claim that Jesus makes in John 14. Because the thing is, if you hold to the story, the illustration of the elephant and the blind man, this is going to be a problem. Yeah. Because Christianity doesn't allow for the statement that Christianity is just a small part of a bigger truth. Again, I do believe that there are truths, that truth is not exclusive to Christianity. However, I do believe that this truth statement is either right or it is wrong. C.S. Lewis said, either Jesus is a good teacher, or he's a lunatic, or he's evil. He's either deranged, evil, or he's a good teacher. But he's not all three at once, because he said stuff like this, which is quite something. You know, his followers died for this. There was this old, in the 60s, a long time before I ever was born, very long time. In the 60s, there was this guy called Keith Green. And he turned to, and it's obviously the 60s and hippies and everything, he was a hippie, and he turned to Buddhism and all Eastern religions and gurus to figure out the meaning of life. And at a certain point, he hears a lot of gurus talking about Jesus. And they say, oh, Jesus is a good man. Or they probably would have said it in a different accent, but I'm not going to attempt trying to, he's a good, I'm not even going to do that. It's going to come across, and then Rachel's going to get angry at me. And so, Jesus is a good man. And then he realizes the Quran actually talks about Jesus as being a prophet. And he hears all these gurus saying, talking about, yeah, Jesus is a teacher, he's a good man, he's a guru. They call him, some of them call him a good guru and everything. And so, and you hear this a lot in life, by the way, in society. It's like, yeah, no, I believe Jesus is a good person. He teaches me how to live a good life. He's a good teacher. And so then he starts to, I'm not quite sure how, but he starts to develop a bit of an appetite for the life of Jesus. He figures out, he learns what Jesus is saying. He reads and he hears sayings of Jesus, and he comes up with this claim and other claims of Jesus, saying that Jesus says, I am the truth. I am the life. Like I am your guru. That's what Jesus was saying. And to him, he realizes all these religions are pointing at Jesus as a good teacher. Jesus is either crazy, deranged, or he's true. And he came to the conclusion, you know what, I believe this person. And there's, I need to get the stats specifically, but there's about 2 billion people right now on earth who believe this claim in one way or another. And so the claims of Jesus do not leave us any middle ground. So we're going to have to make up our opinion about what Jesus is saying here. Is he good? Or is he bad? Or is he crazy? And so it leaves no room for that story. Okay, so in the last couple of minutes, I want to share this scripture, Matthew chapter 7. And this is very fascinating to me. I'm going to sit here because that's going to be easier. So Jesus is saying, and the reason why I want to read this scripture to you is because what do we do? Sorry, we're going to have to take this off for a little bit. What do we do with the truth claim of Jesus? Because Jesus is saying, I am the truth. He makes this truth pretty exclusive. But the problem with that, obviously, is that people can think, and you might think, well, you know, that's a pretty bold saying. And if you're going to apply it in every area of your life, you're probably going to become a little bit superior. You're going to exclude some people in your society. You're going to think that Christians are better than others. You're going to think that you're superior because, you know, we're pretty skeptical, and so am I, about people who claim to have the truth. Because you're going to abuse truth and you're going to manipulate with truth versus non-truth. And so this is going to be a problem. So if Christianity is like that, it's going to be a huge problem for me, because now you've got the truth. And maybe I do, maybe I don't. But even if I claim to have your truth, you can like manipulate me and everything that you say and whatever. And so you can really become my guru and you can abuse it. So Jesus says, it's very fascinating, judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but you do not consider the plank in your own eye? Now let us think about this, because this probably sounds like the opposite of religion to many people. Yeah. This probably sounds like the opposite of religion to you, because you might think, and I don't know what you think. I'm not going to say I know what you think. That would be pretty... No, that would be disturbing for me right now, because it would be very complex, this whole situation. But so you might think, okay, that's, if Christianity becomes extreme, then it's going to become unhealthy. But my statement is, if Christianity becomes extreme, it becomes more like this. Yeah. It becomes less judgmental. Yeah. It becomes more loving. And so, Christianity in its extreme form is not, how do you call it, Kreistochten? It's not holding, well, crusades. Well, we have a Billy Graham meaning of crusades, which is like more like, hey, we're going to have a crusade. But it's not taking up our swords and fighting for truth. Yeah. Christianity in its extreme form is extreme love, is extreme forgiveness. And so maybe, definitely the church has caused a lot of harm. But it hasn't caused harms based on the teaching of Jesus. Yeah. It actually caused harm because it moved away from the loving teaching of Jesus. Yeah. It caused harm because power and religion became power corrupted religion. That's when Christianity started to cause harm, when Christianity became a state religion. And so we have to separate our view about Christianity and about religion from what the teaching that Jesus is saying. And so there is safety in following Jesus, but there might not be safety in following somebody who says, hey, I've got an exclusive truth claim, and you cannot test it because I am your guru. In our church, we say you have to test everything to the truth of the Bible. And you know what? That is a better foundation than to test everything to your subjective opinion, but that's my subjective opinion. So then it goes on, all right? And then Jesus says, by definition, when you are too concerned about other people's opinions, you've got a blank issue. You have got a huge plank in front of you, which is obstructing your view of truth. And so, every person, Jesus says, who looks at other people, even though maybe they have got a plank issue, to you, for your perspective, their issue is a speck problem. Now, speck, what is a splinter? Is that a speck? Yeah, so that's a good translation right there. So that's like a minuscule problem for you because you've got a judging problem. And judging is one of the biggest issues that you can have. As a matter of fact, as a pastor, I've had people coming to me saying, hey, look, I've got an insecurity issue. I've got like this sin issue. I've got this. I've got that. Even though I'm not really, like, I don't find that, you know, people don't find me the best listener. I'm a better talker. So I come up with too many solutions. So they probably go to somebody like Rachel and tell them their problems. But you know, I have never, and probably Rachel has never had this either, where somebody comes to you and saying, you know what, I have got a pride issue. Now, pastor, like just out of the bed, my problem is pride. The reason why is because it's really difficult to see pride because you got like this plank in front of you and it's obstructing your view, and pride is difficult to detect. It's so difficult. And see, Jesus is saying, look, I want you to get rid of this. And this is really important because then it goes on. And I want you to see the context that what he's about to say, he says it in. Then he says, hypocrite. Well, that's... let me just say that's me right now. That's you and me. By the way, he said this mainly to the religious. So if you're religious, it's more for you than if you're non-religious. So if you're not religious right now, that's great for you. You know, so you're not a hypocrite right now. Hypocrites, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And then we go on. Do not give what is holy to the dogs. Okay, let me just go over that, but it's interesting. And then he says, verse 7, ask, and it will be given to you. Many translations say, keep asking, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. Think about that statement. Jesus is so confident about his truth claim that he says, everyone who seeks will find. He says, by definition, seekers are finders. Everyone who knocks, it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks, receives. He who seeks, finds. And to him who knocks, it will be opened. Let's continue. Or what man is there among you? If his son asks for bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then being evil, what he's saying is if you being imperfect, not perfect, not godly, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? First of all, I think it's interesting because the seeking aspect, Jesus says that in the context of not being judgmental. And I think whether you're religious or not religious, I think it is really important to leave your judgment and particularly to leave the concept that you are objective, to leave that at the door and to say, I'm not going to judge, I'm going to deal, I'm going to self-reflect, I'm going to test, literally I'm going to test God. And I'm going to test what I know about him. I'm going to challenge myself. And I'm going to seek him. And I really believe, and I want to hold this challenge out. I really believe, not if you come to church, not if you participate, whatever, not if you give, you know. But if you seek truth, if you seek him, I believe you will find him.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you want to know more about what's going on at C3 The Hague, please follow us on Instagram. We'd love to see you on Sunday.